thinking of more than four reasons to love my next guest, including that he is a master of numbers. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. I'm joined this half hour by Marquette University Law School professor and pollster extraordinaire Charles Franklin. Welcome back, Charles. Thank you for making time.
Great to be here. Thanks.
The last time you and I were together in person was at the Barrymore Theater in Madison on the fateful night of the debate that has changed the course of history, truly. That was the fateful Biden-Trump debate, where Biden, by any measure, struggled. The last poll that Marquette conducted was from way back before that time. It seems like we've all aged years, if not decades. The poll that Marquette published last Wednesday, the one before that was before the debate, before the attempted assassination attempt. It was before Trump's selection of J.D. Vance as his running mate, and it was before the RNC, it was before Biden dropped out, and it was before it became clear that Kamala Harris was going to be and is the Democratic nominee for president of the United States. So just a couple of two, three things have changed, Charles.
Just a little bit. I actually had to get out the calendar and check. It's only been just over 6 weeks.
Wow. Wow. It's so emblematic of this crazy moment that we're in. We keep saying unprecedented. The word has seemed to lose its meaning. It's just meaning a day that ends in Y these days, right?
Yes.
But I happened to be on vacation when this last poll dropped. I was so eager to talk to you about it as I devoured all the information about it because, again, so much has changed. And yet, in a bizarre way, some things haven't changed all that much. Charles, give us the one or two top lines from the poll, if you will.
Well, the thing that hasn't changed is it was a very close race in June that we released the day before the debate, actually.
Yes.
And it's a very close race now. We have Trump up 50-49 with registered voters, but Harris up 50-49 with likely voters. And when you put the third party candidates in, Harris is up by 2. So a very close race. In June, before the debate, it was tied or Biden was up by 2. So that much hasn't changed, but that misses all the stuff that happened between the debate and Biden dropping out. If you look at the polling average in the state, which is other people's polls, not mine, Trump had pulled out to about a 3 or maybe a little more than 3-point lead during that period, almost all because Biden was dropping rather than Trump was rising. So in our new poll, we asked people, if Biden had stayed in the race, who would you vote for? And in that, Trump leads by 4. So there's quite a difference between being tied as we are now and leading by 4 as Trump was in our hypothetical question, or a little over 3 in the polling average. But it still puts us back to this very close race. So that's something that hasn't changed. What has changed, though, is enthusiasm has profoundly changed. All year long, we've seen the percent very enthusiastic, running about 45-47%. That was 15 to 20 points behind where we were in the same time in 2020. But this time, enthusiasm has shot up. It's now at 61%. Compared to 62% in August of 2020. So we're now matching that level from 2020. And Democrats went up by 20 percentage points. Republicans went up by 7, and that's the evidence for the convention bounce.
Right.
Republicans did get a boost from that. It's just overshadowed by Harris's entry in the race. The result is now Republican and Democratic enthusiasm is nearly equal, having had Republicans far ahead until now. So that really alters the engagement in the race. Democrats don't feel like they're bearing this big burden that they really felt all through the winter and spring, not just after the debate.
I think you were quoted as saying that the Democrats were basically in a near depression after the debate, and that Harris's entry and Biden stepping back has just completely changed all of the atmospherics here. I'm actually excited about the, I'm enthused about the enthusiasm gap closing. In my opinion, regardless of who people vote for, the more engaged people are in our democracy, the better for each and every one of us. So I was so heartened to see that renewed interest, that renewed enthusiasm. I also thought it was really interesting. The issues that are important to people, the ranking shifted around a lot, but the issues largely remained the same that are of central importance to both Democrats and Republicans. What are those, Charles?
Yeah, and we didn't see much change. That's part of the stuff that has changed a little bit, but not a lot. The economy still is the number one issue, as it has been all year long, and by quite a margin. It has been that immigration and the border was the second highest, but that slipped just barely into third place, with abortion policy moving just barely into second place. The difference between abortion policy and immigration is just a single percentage point, citing them as the most important problem. But that represents some decline in the immigration issue, a little bit of a rise on the abortion issue. Again, all year long, Democrats have put abortion as their number one issue, but it ranks quite low with independents and low with Republicans. So this is one of the shifting things that having Harris as the candidate may boost the salience of the abortion issue. I think it's a little early to say with any confidence that that's really happened. But the bit of a decline on immigration, I think, is clear. After you get through those three, Medicare and Social Security ranks fairly high each time. But other things, other things like foreign affairs, the Israel-Hamas war, rank quite low.
Fascinating. I have always been curious about the fact that abortion has not appeared in prior polls to be of the topmost or even top two concerns for independents. I, too, am very curious, as you are, Charles, to see if, and again, speaking very frankly here, that Kamala's, the vice president's greater clarity in communication and the fact that she's a woman really does make that issue more salient to more voters. I don't ever expect it to hit number one on the top 40 list for Republicans, because that's not their thing anymore. But certainly I always expected it to be a little higher for independents. So I'm curious to see if that changes in these coming weeks as well.
Yeah, me too. And I think there are a couple of little bits in this. Harris has a bigger advantage. When we ask which candidate would do a better job handling each of these eight issues, when we ask about abortion policy, she has a bigger advantage over Trump now than Biden had over Trump. What was more surprising was throughout the year, through June, about 20% said they didn't see any difference between Biden and Trump on the abortion issue.
I'm What?
Yeah, let's say it again, because it's stunning.
Because you could push me over with a feather right now. What was that, Charles?
20% of respondents said they didn't think there was any difference between Biden and Trump in who would handle abortion better. This month, that has fallen to about 10% saying the same thing with Harris as the candidate. That difference. And if Harris campaigns on it very actively, you would think that that gap would widen more.
Precisely. And again, at the risk of being glib here for a moment, to those 10% of people, I suggest consuming some news on the regular, perhaps even the show on the Civic Media Radio Network, reading one of Professor Franklin's fantastic polls, you know, some acquaintance with the issues of the day. I digress, however. Go ahead, Charles. Sorry.
I just think that the high 20% that didn't see a difference between Biden and Trump had a good deal to do with just being unhappy with both of the candidates. And, you know, that it some of it may be that they really didn't see the policy difference, which we think is pretty big. But I think the dismay over Biden as a candidate that was affecting Democrats in particular, but also alienating independents, that I think has been lifted with Harris. The one issue with Harris and abortion and independence is what we've already talked about. Independents don't rate abortion policy as very important, but by 2-1, they prefer a abortion rights position rather than oppose that. So the trick for Harris here, if she wants to win over some independents, is they're mostly already on her side on the issue, but they're just not ranking it as that important. So potentially the campaign can affect that. Of course, Trump has been trying to downplay the issue by saying, you know, he sent it back to the states through the Supreme Court, and, you know, that sort of absolves him of taking responsibility for it. So we'll see how that issue plays out in the next, what, 80 days, 83 days, something like that.
I think it's 83. Certainly, he's not done himself any favors recently, and J.D. Vance has had to play a bit of cleanup. Trump saying, I believe over the weekend, that mifepristone should in effect be banned, and then J.D. Vance saying, well, what he really meant to say was that it should be left up to the states. It's interesting because I think a lot of the times Trump opens his mouth and some nonsense flops out, and the question is, are people actually paying attention, and do they care about what he said in the past, including that women should be punished if they receive abortions? I also thought it was really interesting to see the enormous lead that Tammy Baldwin has got on Eric Hovde. If we're talking about guys who have stupid things stumble out of their mouth at nearly every turn, we'll talk a little bit more about that margin from Marquette's most recent poll. I'm joined this half hour by Professor Charles Franklin, my friend and yours. We'll talk about the Hovde-Baldwin race after these brief messages. Don't go anywhere. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network.
Do you believe in punishment for abortion? Yes or no, as a principle?
The answer is that there has to be some form of punishment.
For the woman?
Yeah, there has to be some form.
10 years,
I don't
what?
Know. That I don't know.
Welcome back, Wisconsin. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. I'm joined this half hour by Marquette University Law School Professor Charles Franklin. He also is the artiste behind Marquette Law School's polls, which have become, I think, a national standard. Certainly one that if I were running a campaign, I would be paying very close attention to, this being a swing state and all. And in addition to the absolute surging of enthusiasm in the election, up by nearly 20 points, whether we're looking at both Republicans and Democrats or just Democrats, since Kamala Harris has joined the election, has become the nominee for the Democratic ticket for president. The other fascinating portion of the poll, I thought, Charles, was frankly, the enormous margin by which Tammy Baldwin leads Eric Hovde. Tell us what the numbers are looking like, and have they changed a bit since your last poll?
Actually, this one has been pretty stable. We've not seen much movement since Hovde got in the race. If we look at all registered voters, Baldwin has a 7-point lead. When it's likely voters, that's a 5-point lead. But there are also two independents on the ballot. When we put them in the mix, Baldwin leads by 6. Mm. So take your choice, 5, 6, or 7 points. It's in that mid to slightly upper single digit margin. And again, that's what we've seen in June and in April before that. There is a little bit of movement. While Tammy Baldwin's favorable ratings have been pretty stable since the spring. She's gone from slightly more unfavorable than favorable to more favorable than unfavorable. And this time she's dead even, 44% favorable, 44% unfavorable. So that's been a hallmark of her career. Her favorability ratings remain pretty close to evenly balanced, usually a shade more favorable than not. But throughout her career, that hasn't moved up or down tremendously over time. So pretty stable views of her. Hovde, on the other hand, a year ago, 85% said they didn't know enough to have an opinion about him. He's now brought that down into the mid-30s that still don't have an opinion. That's still more than Baldwin, but there's a long time till election day by some counts. And so I'm sure those numbers will come down more. The problem for Hovde is over that time, as people went from the 80s to the 50s to the 40s and now the 30s that didn't have an opinion of him, his unfavorable rating has gone up faster than his favorable rating. So as a result, he's been becoming a little more net unfavorable across each of our polls. Now, certainly in these last 6 weeks, the Senate race was completely overshadowed by the presidential developments. Soon we're going to have the Democratic convention. So I'm really looking to the traditional post-Labor Day campaign to kick in, and we'll see how the Senate race develops further.
I jokingly referred to the fact that Hovde appears to keep putting his foot in his mouth in myriad ways. You know, as a candidate, whomever you are, you don't want to see your name recognition going up. And as people get to know you, your unfavorabilities are also surging up too. That's not good. You want people to get to know you and like you. Doesn't seem that the last poll is reflecting that sorting out much for Eric Hovde. Charles, my two cents is, oh, please ask a question specifically about Eric Hovde's USA tight T-shirt that he wore in the ads during the Olympics. I'm fascinated. Do people feel motivated? A surge of patriotism. I'm joking, of course, Charles. Please don't do that. These favorable, unfavorable ratings, I also thought some of the movement as we look at Trump and Harris was fascinating. Tell us a bit about those movements as well.
Yeah. So Trump actually did get a convention bounce. His favorability moved up just a little bit, but it moved noticeably up. Likewise, when we asked people, you know, to rate the job he did as president, that went up just a smidgen. And so there was a little bit of movement in his direction like we would normally expect after a convention, not to mention the assassination attempt as well. So that bounce did happen, even though Biden's withdrawal stomped on the attention to the convention 2 days later. Harris had been in favorable unfavorables similar to Joe Biden, with favorability ratings in the mid to upper 30s, unfavorables in the 50s. That's normal. Vice presidents usually roughly mirror the president, but a little bit lower than the president. This time in Wisconsin, she moved up to about 41 or 42. So that's a 4 to 5 point increase for her. In our national poll released the next day, last week on Thursday, she moved up more. She moved up from the mid to upper 30s up to about 45 or so, her best reading since becoming vice president. So again, a clear movement on that. And it's worth noting, she didn't suddenly change over that period. What happened was voters started looking at her in a different way, thinking of her in a different way. And with that came this substantial surge nationally, moderate surge here in Wisconsin.
Along with that, of course, you now have a very different optics, I guess would be a way to put it, when we're looking at the question of age, right? And of course, beforehand, your polling had showed pretty consistently that more voters and likely voters were concerned about Biden's age than Trump. It's a little different now, isn't it?
It's a tremendous change. With Biden, 76% said he was too old to be president. With Harris, 12%. Mm. I'm curious about the 12%, but I imagine they're 18-year-olds.
Yeah, she's 59. I'm like, what's the problem?
Yeah, really. But with Trump now, it's 59% saying he's too old. So that's not quite where Biden was. But now the contrast is stark between the 59 saying he's too old versus the only 12 saying that about Harris. So what had been Trump's advantage on this, people seeing Biden worse, now becomes Trump's problem to deal with that perception that there's only one old guy in the race and he's really old compared to the other candidate.
It is true. Watch what you wish for. It may come and bite you. Maybe a little bit of that happening on Team Trump these days. My special guest this half hour, pollster and law professor Charles Franklin. It is always a pleasure to have you. Charles, when can we expect the next poll? Is it going to be after the Labor Day holiday, as you suggest?
Yeah, we'll start polling after the Democratic convention, and it'll be released after Labor Day, but in early September, second week of September, I think.
Hope to have you back then, sir. We will talk more. Thank you so much for your time. Charles Franklin, professor and pollster from Marquette University Law School. Up next, everybody, I'm going to be joined by Amelia Heredia. She is running for the state assembly against a long-serving Democrat. Big primary, big election tomorrow. Not all the action in November. Some action tomorrow, folks. So don't go anywhere. We'll be joined by Amelia. I'm Maggie Dawn. He is Fancy Brian Kelly. You just heard from Professor Charles Franklin. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Don't go anywhere.
But nobody likes me.
Welcome back, Wisconsin. It's ticket time.
I like ticket time.
I love ticket time.
I feel like I could be a winner.
You too can be a winner, not just Fancy Brian. And even though the Brewers lost yesterday, me and my dad were big winners because we were at the game. It was gorgeous. You do not get better baseball watching weather than that. Exciting game. Brewers had a 5-game winning streak rolling into yesterday. Dropped one by a single run to the Cincinnati Reds. And they take up what should be must-watch baseball TV and listening. This evening, they take on the Los Angeles Dodgers, folks. First pitch at 7:10 p.m. at AmFam Field. We have four, count them four. I'm not doing them in two groups. We're going to do them all at once. Four terrific tickets for you and yours in the Civic Media Loge box. Can't get a better
The Loge.
Can't get a better view of the stadium. Folks, if you want to win those tickets, now is the time. 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. You need only answer this simple, pimple question. The question to win the tickets is this. You cannot text. You must call. Here is the question. What movie starring Charlie Sheen was filmed in Old County Stadium? Extra cool points if you were actually an extra in the movie. I was there for hours and hours and hours. It was amazing. You might glimpse my face in the crowd. No, I watched that film on slow, on VHS from Blockbuster until the tape was worn out. You cannot see me in the movie, but I was on the third baseline in the crowd. What film was shot in Old County Stadium here in Milwaukee, and you will get yourself four tickets to the Brewers-Dodgers game. First pitch this afternoon at 7:10 p.m., 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. Give us a call. Say hello to Fancy Brian if you want to take home some of those tickets. It's going to be.
Don't worry. Nobody's listening anyway.
We hope you are this afternoon because I have a fabulous next guest. We're going to bring up Wisconsin Assembly candidate Amelia Heredia. Welcome back, Amelia. Really great to have you. How are you doing, friend?
I am doing okay. I'm really excited to be here and really excited for the primary election that's tomorrow.
It is. Folks, if you haven't heard from Amelia before, she is a Milwaukee native. She's running for an assembly seat, District 11. What are the boundaries on District 11? What neighborhoods should folks be looking to vote for you if they are from District 11?
Yeah, so really big boundaries, edged, if you will. But if you are close to Havenwood, State Forest, we go all the way up to Bradley. We go all the way west, or east rather, to Brown Deer Park, and then all the way over, capture most of Good Hope, all the way to 83rd. So I encourage everyone, as I always do, to go to myvote.wi to, you know, see an example of their full ballot. But pretty big assembly and a lot of constituents to represent there.
So those are the boundaries of District 11. You have never been in elected office before, Amelia, but you have been an advocate and an organizer. Tell people about your background.
Yeah, so for the last 7 years, I have been at UW-Milwaukee and have really been pushing the envelope in student government as it pertains to the different ways that we show up and we advocate for students, which then translates to the way that administration is engaging with students, engaging with the greater Milwaukee community, and the different ways that we are bringing folks to the table or getting rid of the table if there are no seats there, which is something that I am a big advocate for. So things like writing legislation to address the issue with DEI, right? So writing a position for DEI, writing committees, sitting on committees, meeting with stakeholders inside the community to collaborate with the university students, not only broadly, but specifically when we talk about disenfranchised communities and ensuring that when we think about things like mental health care, when we think about things like food insecurity, that we are really addressing them in an equitable way, but also in an innovative way. So we continue to do things the same way we have always done things. And I'm wanting to push against that and find different ways, because the ways that we've been doing things just aren't working.
Your opponent in this race is a long, long time county board member, Saquana Taylor. She served on the Milwaukee School Board as well. Why should folks vote for you and not Supervisor Taylor?
Yeah, thanks for that question. I'm getting a lot of this at the doors, and it has been, I appreciate this question and this the directness, right? This is not just a title for me. So this is a way to push the community forward. Like I just mentioned, there we have done things. So this is a twofold answer, right? We have done things politically the same way, over and over and over again, and it's not working. People are dying. People are being harmed. People are being disenfranchised, and there's no opportunities and resources because of the lack of allocation of funding. And it's frustrating. I don't want to continue for my communities, for District 11, for the Northwest side, for the state of Wisconsin, et cetera, to feel like this has to be the norm. So I'm showing up authentically on doors and having these conversations, but, you know, folks have made jokes, right? Like, oh, okay, well, this is going to be a big title for you. And it's not about the title, it's about the work. And I think that there is a difference between voting on what's considered to be the right side and then actually showing up and doing the work and getting our hands dirty and thinking innovatively about some of these solutions that we have for these rather complicated issues, but they're definitely not individualized, right? In that way, they're very much community issues.
Now, I want to be really careful here because this, what I'm about to say is my opinion. I do not want this attributed to you in any way, shape, or form, Amelia. So for folks listening out there, this is my opinion. Supervisor Taylor, again, has been in elected office for a very, 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 very long time. One of the themes of today's show is that I think new blood is essential. Amelia, I've seen you in action. I have spent a lot of time looking at your background. We've had some conversations. I know that you're doing this from a really good place. You're not doing this simply for the next title. I don't know that I can say the same for Supervisor Taylor, if I'm being really candid. And that's what everybody that's listening deserves. I can't say that. And why do I say that? There was one moment in my service alongside Supervisor Taylor, whom I have an incredible amount of respect for. But there was one moment serving alongside her that I thought I was incredibly disappointed in her. And that was when the county had to take the sales tax vote. I will never argue that sales taxes aren't regressive. They are. They hurt poor people. They're bad. I wish that the county would never, ever have had to even consider an additional sales tax. But that's the place that we were in. Now, because Chairwoman Marcelia Nicholson wanted to debate this point, she wanted to make some specific arguments about one of her colleagues, which I'm going to get to later. She had given and passed the gavel to the vice chair of the county board, who was Supervisor Taylor. That meant that when the votes for the sales tax were cast, it is a matter of courtesy in parliamentary practice that the chairperson gets to cast their vote last. So what this meant is that after this extremely difficult, heart-wrenching debate, which I know many, many elected officials hated the fact that we had to consider a sales tax, hated that, because it is regressive. The vote went, and it was very clear by the time it got to acting chair Sequana Taylor that the sales tax had passed. I also know, because there was a lot of lobbying done on this very issue, that Supervisor Taylor had previously said that she would support it. On that day, when she figured out her vote didn't matter, she didn't stand with the majority of her colleagues and take the tough vote and vote yes for the sales tax. She literally bobbled her head back and forth and went, no. I was devastated in that moment because the measure of the elected official, and when I know you've been around too long, is when you take the easy way out because you want to have it both ways. And there are very few issues left, Amelia. As you noted, we're left with the hard stuff, the stuff that requires brutal honesty, and it requires elected officials who will do the thing even when it's hard, even when it might politically cost them. And she didn't do that day. She took the easy way out. And for that reason, if I lived in District 7, you would be getting my vote, Amelia. I want to give you just a couple more minutes. I know you've talked about some of your key issues. I know you've talked about child advocacy. I wanted you to talk a little bit more about that because this is something I know you're extremely passionate about.
Yeah, thank you. And I appreciate, you know, your insight and hearing, you know, I'm hearing the same thing on the doors where folks are tired of, you know, it's just that excuse of like, that's just the way politics work. Yeah. And I'm working to push against that. And that might be also, you know, shooting myself in the foot, but wanting to see better and more innovative policies. But so child advocacy. I'm a current CASA court-appointed special advocate. I think I talked about this maybe a little bit in passing before, but I help determine permanency and the right place of permanency for children in Milwaukee County that have been displaced for one reason or the other. I've also interned at the Public Defender's Office with that dealt with you know, youth that were justice impacted. And I used to be a child, right?
Yes.
So those three things really inform my advocacy. And I am seeing that children are left on the wayward. I mean, I'm going to be completely blunt with this. Children are at the disposal of the adults and the systems before them. And if the adults don't have the resources, then the children do not have the resources. If the mom doesn't have housing, if grandma doesn't have housing, if your cousin that's taking care of you doesn't have housing, then you don't have housing. And it's really important to me, especially when we're talking about justice impacted youth, that we are thinking far more broadly and holistically about addressing those needs. So of course, the solution is allocating that funding, but we need to really start asking the question, why? Why do we continue to do the things that we are already doing with the systems, with the statutes, with the policies and with the procedures. I have even, you know, Education Wife has always been a really big advocate of children and youth. And I want to make it very, very, very clear that any harmful policy, any complacency within our legislature directly impacts the children. And I think a lot of folks forget that.
I couldn't agree with you more. And I have incredible respect and reverence for the work that you do. A lot of people, and I'll be blunt, people on school boards, people on the county board, they've never actually done this kind of work up close and personal with the individual young people whom, frankly, get chewed up and spit out by the system. And it's freaking terrible. It's easy to say a bunch of words, and I'm going to talk about another candidate for assembly after our next break that loves to spew words. But Amelia, you have my support. You have my respect for the work that you every day on behalf of kids in our community. It is the real work. So again, all of my best to you. That's Amelia Heredia. She is running for State Assembly District 11. That race will be decided tomorrow, folks. So get out there and vote. Make a plan to vote. You can find out if you're in District 11 by going to myvote.wi.gov. Thanks so much, Amelia. Good luck tomorrow.
Thank you for having me.
It's a real pleasure. Again, folks, that was Amelia Heredia. She is a candidate for Wisconsin State Assembly District 11. When we come back, I'm going to give you my thoughts about District 13 and the Democratic runoff between Ryan Clancy, the socialist, and Jared Anderson after these brief messages here on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Good luck. We're all counting on you.
You definitely want to come along for this ride. I love it when I get to do a takedown. Because I'm going to give them a read, as the kids say. Folks, I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. And you know, one of the things that I've heard from callers and folks that may be on the right end of the spectrum from time to time is, Maggie, you don't criticize Democrats. I sure do, frankly, all the time. I just did this entire stinking hour. The entire hour, basically, other than talking about the polling with Charles Franklin, I've been criticizing Democrats. And I've got a special, acute amount of criticism for a guy that calls himself a Democrat but isn't, calls himself a progressive but isn't. He's an extremist. And his name's Ryan Clancy. He's running for re-election in Assembly District 13. His opponent is a guy by the name of Jared Anderson, who's a lawyer, community advocate. And why, might you ask, Maggie, do you have such criticism, such ire for Representative Clancy? Well, because I worked with this guy for 4 years at Milwaukee County. And Milwaukee County's county board is nearly all Democrats and liberals. There's a handful of conservatives, but they're vastly outnumbered. Ryan Clancy, in 4 years on the Milwaukee County board, became the most hated guy in the building. All of his colleagues can't stand him. Not one. Not all of them will go on the record, but I'm going to tell you, that's my take. And he spent 2 years in the state assembly, and guess what he did there? All of his colleagues, except for maybe one or two, hate this guy.
You don't have any friends. Nobody likes you.
Ryan Clancy, nobody likes you. And there are a couple of really basic reasons why nobody likes Ryan Clancy. And in no particular order, he's lied about stuff. Here's an example. My deputy, was in a hearing. We were talking about deaths in the county jail, something that could not be more serious. No one should ever, ever die while they're in the county or any government's care and custody. Never should happen. But what we do also know is that the need for mental health services, acute mental health services, has skyrocketed. We do a terrible job as a society caring for people with acute mental health needs. We know it's gotten more acute since COVID. And that has resulted in increasing self-harm and suicide attempts in facilities like the Milwaukee County Jail across the nation. My colleague, someone who works for me, was trying to make that point. Ryan Clancy went out in front of the jail after she made that point that we're seeing these acute needs. We do not have the resources to meet them. It's terrible. That is the point she was making. He went outside after that hearing, gathered a bunch of news cameras in front of him, gathered people who lost loved ones in our county jail, something that should never ever happen, and said to these cameras and these grieving families that my colleague that worked with me in my office, that my office, my former office, believes that it's okay if people die in our jail. Now, what that is, folks, is a lie, not a misquote. It's a lie, a damn lie, an exploitative lie. So he's a liar. I know that he has taken information shared with him in confidence and leaked it to the press. So he's not trustworthy. He calls himself a Democrat when he's proudly called himself a socialist before in public mailers. A liar again. But here's the piece that bothers me the most. Ryan Clancy came from an incredibly wealthy family. He drives a Tesla around. And what he is he acts as the textbook definition of a white savior. And any person who disagrees with Ryan Clancy's policy positions or beliefs, he will intimate or flat out call bad people. He will assail their morals and their values. He will attack them. And when a white man from a rich family who drives around a Tesla attacks black and brown elected officials who are from the 53206 zip code in this state, I say no more of that garbage. And you don't have to take my word for it. This is the county board chairwoman from the floor of the county board talking about Ryan Clancy. Let's take a listen.
And when these so-called allies stand to oppose this text today, remember which communities will suffer most if we don't adopt today and which will drive off in their Tesla.
Sorry that the sound is a little wonky there. Okay, we had to slow it down from a sped up recording. But what she said there was that when certain elected officials tell you what's good for black and brown people, when they drive off in their Tesla, they don't know what the hell they're talking about. And that's Ryan Clancy. Here's what else. Ryan Clancy can't hold two competing thoughts in his head at the same time. He knows no nuance. And you need only look to Ryan Clancy's public Facebook posts about two issues which could not be more explosive or important to the entire state today and the nation. That is police reform and the trust between police and community and the conflict in Gaza. What Ryan Clancy has said on the record is that there is no dignity, nothing in policing. That man doesn't deserve to hold public office. Shame, sir. He also refused to support a resolution that came out of the Wisconsin legislature condemning Hamas's attack on October 7th. Ryan, here's what. We can condemn Hamas for being a terrorist organization, and we can demand dignity for Palestinians. At the same time, we can advocate for a ceasefire and condemn Hamas. You are not a liberal, sir. You are not a progressive. You're a self-interested hypocrite who has anointed himself the savior of all things democratic. Shame on you. If you live in District 13, I urge you respectfully to vote for Jared Anderson tomorrow because it really does matter. Let's say goodbye to Ryan Clancy and those like him. It's good to be back in the seat, Brian. I had a few things on my chest.
It's got to feel good, doesn't it?
Few things. Oh, and by the way, folks, if you think I've not invited Ryan to come on the show and debate me, I have. Multiple times. So, to top it all off, he's a chicken. That'll do it for me today, folks. I'm Maggie Dawn. That's Brian Kelly. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Remember, I'll stand up for you. I hope you stand up for me. But it's always better when we stand together.
But nobody likes me.
Why not go?